Right. And the fiasco over a makeup doubleheader in Philadelphia.
I don't know if I remember that, but I do. That was some of our issues.
When the Pirates threatened to not play the second game of the doubleheader, it was after a night game.
I can't remember,
remember that.
I really don't remember, but let's see. What do you got?
Yeah. I got some clippings here.
Okay.
Which might help. This was... It's these two things here. They wanted to make up a doubleheader a day after a night game when they had open dates in
September.
Yeah,
that's right. We had. That's one of the things we... those are some of the things that we got into our so-called... Of course, we didn't have any leverage then. We didn't have a union.
Right.
So... but this is one of the things that were agreed on, and it was brought up, and our players are very adamant about it. I can remember that, yeah. I can remember that very well.
Do you think you actually would have walked out on the second game? Or were you just trying to,
I guess
hoping to get something done?
I guess. That was a test. I mean, I don't know if we would have had 100% of our players willing to do that. We were not, as I said, you got to remember, looking what you're seeing now and what we had then, not many of the players, even when you mentioned union, they would, my God, we're not, they wouldn't even want to admit that we were close to a union. And that was the feeling, believe me. I guess you might have even called we were a company union. See what I mean?
Yeah. In retrospect, does it seem like the dark ages?
Absolutely. I mean, who would have thought that, I'm not saying it's all bad either. I think there's been some very positive things here. It's happened, you know, the salary's probably out of hand a little bit. There's no question about that. I think nobody, there isn't a player that wouldn't have, that wouldn't play in my area would turn these salaries down either. Let's face it. I'd love to have had a $5 million salary. There's no question about it. But as you mentioned this, I do beg to remember, I doubt if we would have walked out of the game. I'm not saying we had a weak organization, but we didn't have any leverage there. And I don't think the way our players felt, you might have three or four players that were screaming and yelling, and then it started to overflow a little bit. And so we did test it. Yeah.
This article by Dan Daniel here.
He says Dan Daniel, wrote for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says the owners saw it as a test case because of the extra income the players were getting from the All-Star, from the second All-Star
second
game.
Second All-Star. We got criticized for the second All-Star game. There isn't any
they
question
said
about that because we were trying to, you know, to beef up that to money for the players' retirement fund. And nobody liked it. The writers, especially the ones in New York, really ripped into us. Dick Young especially, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Daniel seems sympathetic here. He talks about the owners seem to feel the rules don't matter anymore. If we give the players extra money, we should be able to tell them
Well, I
whatever.
Think there was that feeling. Yeah. There isn't any question about that. It wasn't a... let's put it this way. The Pittsburgh Ball Club, Dan Galbraith and Tom Johnson, you know, they were, in my opinion, they were for us. Dan Galbraith early spearheaded that retirement program. And it didn't get to the point where we thought of it should be. We were concerned that, I think at the time in the early 60s, we were getting 60% of the proceeds from the All-Star and World Series. We heard rumors from some of the management that was too much, we're going to cut them back. These are the things that started the rumblings. Maybe we better get a little stronger organization. This is what was happening going into the middle 60s, late 60s. Then there was talk that, you know, some of the, there was even talk that the professional sports teams were going to be part of the Teamsters Union. There was even rumors of that thing.
It was right before Miller arrived.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those things were developing. So this is one of the reasons where Robin Roberts and Jim Bunning, myself, and two or three others sat down. You know, before we get out of this damn thing, we better you know, leave in pretty good shape. And that's how this thing started. None of us were at that time were thinking, especially me, that I would ever want to see a players on a pickup line. That's the way I feel.
Right, that's the quote from this Sporting News article.
That's the way I feel. I mean, that's just it. It's nothing personal against Marvin Miller. I wasn't for Miller at the start. I was for Bob Cannon. I thought he could have done a good job, but it wasn't going to work out. We felt the office should have been in New York, more of the hub there, and Bob Cannon, you know, won the office in the Midwest and things like that. I don't know how strong Cannon would have been. I don't think he'd been as strong as Miller. There isn't any question about it. But that wasn't going to be his role as far as I was concerned. It was more of a full-time job and one that he could get along with management and get along with players. That was my thinking. This was the opposite of several of these other guys.
You saw him more as a liaison man.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Which
he had been, but they'd have been full time. It'd been more of a, active role than it was. It was kind of all part time.
And he didn't want to do that.
Well, he wanted he wanted full time, but he wanted some different things involved where the office was going to be. You know, and the players, you know, we tried. Well, what's wrong with the Midwest? Well, that wasn't going to do it. There was other candidates too. I think Nixon wasn't a sincere candidate. He was going to give you somebody from his law firm. But I will say this about Miller. After Cannon got shot down as the lead guy, what I respect about Miller, I remember in the first meeting we had after he said with some of the players, well, let's give him a five-year, we want to give him a five-year contract, and blah, 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 blah. So Miller comes back, and after he heard that, he says, look, he said, I may not want this job after 1 year, and you may not want me, so try me for 1 year and see if you like me. I really like that. I honestly believe, there isn't any question, Miller is the best there is at his business, and he's totally honest. That's what I can say about Marvin Miller. Yeah, totally honest. And tough. He's tougher than I thought he was going to be. I want to tell you that. And I think, imagine, you know, they didn't, you know, my God. It was, but I think there's been some good things involved. There isn't any question about it. We were concerned, are you going to be able to keep up the players' retirement program, keep pace with inflation? Is this thing going to grow? He's been able to do that.
Yeah.
He was able to do that. And, you know, we're... Most of the players who were lucky enough to get under the wire are fairly comfortable today. I credit Miller for that.
Yeah.
We didn't know, and I'm sure Jim Bunning or Robin Roberts didn't know, that he was going to challenge the reserve clause. I don't think any of us knew that he was going to do that. I think one of the key things is the players, where it hurt the players the most were the players even before I came up. You know, all the minor league players, you know, they used to hold those players. Some of those guys were great ball players, but some of those organizations had so many good teams, they never got called up. You know, that was unfair. That's unfair, you know. So, what else you want to know?
Let's see. In 64, you testified at Senator Philip Hart's congressional hearing, antitrust hearing.
I remember going to Washington. Was that the time with Cannon and we were in Washington, D.C.?
Probably.
I really don't remember much about it. I know going to Washington, D.C. with Cannon and with the congressman from Wisconsin. What was his name? Polish name.
You got me on that
Well,
one.
Anyway. Okay.
This article in the Sporting News from 63, where you responded to an article in the Georgetown Law Review.
Where was it? Yeah.
there are some comments in there I'd like to ask you about.
Okay,
it's interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting in hindsight to go look.
Sure. Well, yeah.
Look back at this and see, things seem much more clear now.
Yeah. Okay.
Everything the law professors asserted in retrospect seems true, and everything you responded with seems true, except for one thing, except for subscribing to the myth that the reserve clause kept the leagues competitive. And the fear that if everybody became free agents, the rich teams would gobble up.
That's true. That did not happen, did it?
No.
That didn't happen.
Right. And it hadn't been true up to them because the Yankees and Cardinals and Dodgers and a few other teams had dominated with with the reserve rule.
Well, we were getting, don't forget, I was getting some feedback from some management on that, too.
Really?
On the way their feeling was, you know. It wasn't any, you know, we've met with management. We've met with, and we heard their side of it. And there were other player reps felt the same way. I think Larry Jackson, who's now, you know, who died, felt the way I did about that.
Were you told not to rock the boat?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I was playing it like this. I was playing it like this because I knew, you know, we knew what was at stake. We knew what was at stake. But, you know, we were... not threatened or anything, but you know we got some long looks from a lot of the general managers and things like that because it is, you know, we were forming sides, but we never really saw that thing get out of hand here in Pittsburgh like some of the other teams. I think St. Louis had a lot of problems, didn't it? With Augie Bush and things like that. I mean, I remember I remember that, but. Go ahead.
Was Judge Cannon was his thrust that he'll do for you what he can, and if he can't, well, that's the way it goes.
No, he didn't say that. He felt there were some needs. He felt there was a need for a full-time representative. There isn't any question about that because, as I said, some of these. As we had little vision of what was coming up on the horizon with greater revenues from television and everything else, we were concerned about the hospitalization. It's like the employee benefits. We were concerned about things like that, that we wanted to maintain and keep pace. As the revenues increase, we want to maintain our thrust. You know, we didn't want to get cut back. The rumor, as I said before, getting cut back to, as the revenue is going up, we're going to cut you back. You know, if it goes up to $100 million, you're not going to get 60%, you're going to get 20. You know, that did concern us. That did concern us.
Leonard Coppett has told me that one of the reasons the Players Association took a long time to grow is that the men of your generation were raised to believe that the boss is the boss.
That's exactly right. You're exactly right. There isn't any question about that. I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Sure. That's a good point. I should have said that earlier. That's exactly right.
And in baseball...
That's right.
It complicated things.
Yeah.
Because... more than in most industries, the owners needed you as much as you needed them.
And it wasn't, you know, that's why I say you give Miller credit. It wasn't until long that he got the leverage that he knew this all along, obviously. You know, he didn't think we were getting all what we should have been right from the start. How we went about it, I don't know. I think there's at least 7 or 8 reps that wouldn't have. If they thought this is the way it was going to happen, they wouldn't have gone for it. And it wasn't anything personal. It was just what you said before. This is the way we were brought up. We weren't brought up like this to do this.
That was a hectic time in 66, wasn't it?
That was a tough time. I was getting, you know, I was trying to hold on.
You had your own problems.
Well, that's true. I was trying to, you know, I lost my fastball. I was trying to hold on with the Yankees anyway. But I did, I remember... After, you know, Miller was approved, I was out in front, and I took him around, and he was very laid back, you know, and
And he had to overcome a lot of stuff, you know, with the management and everything. They didn't want to have him in there and different camps. I'm sure you read all about that. I don't know his book.
Yes, yeah.
And elsewhere, but I can say this, as we got approved, I took Marvin Miller around and was for him. I believe the guy, to be totally honest, still today, and I did that. I like what he said at our meeting. He says, look, you guys may not want me. I may not want you. I don't want any multiple-year contract. Let's see if we fit. I like that.
Yeah. And he did.
Yeah.
Just to be fair, I when we talked on the phone, you mentioned
right.
some.
Yeah, Bunny was giving it to me. He says, "Hey, they felt really blasted." I says, "For why? Why?"
Well, I can tell you, I've gone through all this. He doesn't really blast you.
Yeah.
He makes only one comment that I would say is personal. He said, "You're a good pitcher and a better Republican."
And a what?
And a better Republican.
What? Okay, that's all right. But that's all right. Hey, and, you know, in fact, you know, he was, when I got the labor endorsement out here, he helped me get the labor endorsement here in Pittsburgh when I ran for politics. I think he was figured I was too close to the Pittsburgh management. I was close to Tom Johnson. He was a minority. He had a minority interest here at the club. But I certainly didn't let that interfere with me supporting. In other words, after I had lost out with my guy Cannon, I certainly didn't back away from Miller. I mean, that's the thing. You know, that's not right for him to even say that, just because I was the guy, you know, that stuck my neck out after. Christ, the Pittsburgh people didn't want him. Who really did want him? Who wanted Marvin Miller in the total picture of the whole thing from management? Who wanted him?
Nobody from management.
Who?
You mean from the players?
Yeah,
association?
From the management part of it. Who was playing neutral? Who was saying, well, he might be all right for the players? No one. That's right, no one.
And really, only Robin Roberts was the guy who mainly pushed for him.
He pushed for him, but Jim Bunning did too.
Yeah.
Jim Bunning did too.
Miller talks about how he was upset because you hadn't met him during the earlier meetings, and you pushed Cannon through in that first round of
elections. Well, that's true. That is true. We all had different people now.
Yeah.
We all had different people. I can't remember. Larry Jackson had somebody. Larry Jackson did not want any part of Marvin Miller. He was the Cubs rep. I can't. And it wasn't a unanimous deal. There isn't any question about it. I was close to Bob Cannon. He was a friend of mine. When he said, you know, after looking at the his judicial situation and everything, he finally decided, I can handle this. And I was very happy about it. But, you know, Roberts didn't want him. That was it. So I wasn't going to, I can't remember when I met Miller for the first time, but I sure wasn't dodging him deliberately because I wasn't, I had my man. But we heard the deal, and we heard some of the things that Cannon, changed his mind about that we just weren't going to go along with, namely that to run the office out of Milwaukee.
Miller just says a few more minutes, I think. Miller says that I guess Roberts got you to call him after Cannon.
That is true. Sure.
Said,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Said I know him. He's quoting you. Cannon misled me. I'd known him a long time and felt he was more familiar with the players' problems because he'd been our legal advisor for the past 6 years, but I made a mistake. I hope you'll reconsider.
That's what I said. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I think that's being very honest. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it was a difficult situation. I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, okay, that's nothing wrong with that.
But he didn't.
There's nothing wrong with that.
He didn't really blast you.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
want you to...
I had a difference of opinion. I mean, Miller ought to know that you can't have everybody 100% for you.
Right, and that's what it reads like.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Okay.
How right. are you be at ease about
yeah.
that?
Thank you.
What, in your tenure as a player rep mm-hmm. and as league rep, what would you say were the... Were the biggest improvements made for the players?
You mean before Miller?
Before Miller.
Oh, before Miller.
How much ground had you had been covered before Miller arrived?
Well, it's awful tough to compare the thing because it's like apples and oranges, really. I guess one of the things we did. Yeah, you know, we had Norman Lewis back in the early 50s, you know, and the management wouldn't even sit down with us. I mean, they'd walk out because they were not, I don't know what he, I can't remember exactly what he did to turn everybody off, but we held a meeting in Washington, and none of the management people showed up. I guess, yeah, that's right. And then after he left, I guess we got to communicating with management. They were willing to sit down to talk to about the getaway days. That was a big thing. It wasn't, you know, what it wasn't a money issue. But we did. We were able to hold the. We were able to hold that percentage of money from the All-Star and World Series. We were able to hold that. I think we had a deal there
mm-hmm.
until the point where. It started, it looked like it was going to go out of sight.
Television money.
That's when, this all evolved here with Miller and Roberts and everything else.
Right.
That's when this thing started.
And the year I'm focusing on, 68 and 69, is when it came to a head, when they got the new contract and the playoffs came in.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Really
that's
to, when it, that's really had to hold the line that Miller did.
That's right. Now that's right. You know, that's tenacious as hell. No question about it. Yeah. See, he didn't show all those. He did not show all of those attributes when we first had him. I mean, who knows? But he was it. He was the U.S. Steel right-hand man of David J. McDonald. He was a laborer. He wasn't an attorney, was he? I don't think
no.
he was. No.
No.
He was economist. an economist. He was a labor expert.
In reading about it, my impression is that before Miller came along, the players were conditioned to think small, right? Take a little game, a little bit here,
yeah,
get better
you might
locker
be right
room facilities, get better travel conditions,
per diem, increase the per diem.
And
yeah, well, wasn't anything there. I mean, what did we have? What was the leverage that the players had then?
Yeah.
You know, as you brought it out, we were always conditioned, in my generation, this is what you said about, you know, respect your bosses.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that either.
Yep. All right, one more thing.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Then I'll let you go. And this is something you said in the Sporting News article, which was quite true, and it's something that Miller believed also. If you operate as a union, you immediately make a sharp cleavage between the players and the club executives. We will begin antagonizing the owners.
Right, right.
And that's what Marvin said when he came in. Don't expect me to be the friend of the owners. If the owners like me, I'm doing a bad job.
Well, I can't remember how he put in those words. Maybe that's what he said. Okay. Right.
But,
if that's what he said. I can't remember exactly saying that.
So
he did say that, as I said, the big thing that Miller said, as I was impressed with after I met him and talked with him, and, was I saying that he did not demand a big salary or a lifetime of benefits or, you know. And there's a lot of other people we had in there wanted all that, you know. I like the fact that he was kind of, let's wing it. We're going to wing it for a year and see what happens. And I said, I think I can do a job for you, and I'm not going to be the most popular man in baseball. I think he did say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And in a way, he approached that the same way he approached negotiations with the owners. If I make enough games this year, I'll make more games next year, make more games next year.
Right.
In the long run, it's going to add up to a lot bigger picture than anybody's thought of before.
Yeah. There's no question. Who knew this was going to be able to evolve the way it has?
Amazing, isn't it?
That's right. And I'm not saying it's all bad. I mean, it's all a new... These players today don't realize, you know, what happened. Or they know of nothing else. You know, they know of nothing else. The minimum salary of $800,000, things, stuff like that. But I can remember coming into baseball in 50. How some of these old-timers, you know, never made $8,000 to $10,000 a year. They'd look at us like we were, my God, we're millionaires. You know, here's Johnny Adinelli signed for $60,000. The players, some of the old players won't even speak to him. So, you know, transition there from the late 40s until the early 50s, you know, when the bonus rule was in.
Right. Which,
you know, like Pye Trainer, Pye was a hell of a nice guy here. And Pye says, my God, my top salary was $10,000 a year. Here comes a bonus player. We sign Paul Pettit, and they give him $100,000. You know, these were the issues then, too. So.
You were right about that bonus rule. And bad.
Bonus rule, you had to stay with the club, parent club, for 2 years. That was a lousy rule.
It hurt teams.
It hurt the players.
It hurt them, too.
You know, the one salvation I had was the bonus rule went out. I did sign enough for the bonus thing. But... I was with the ball club. We were so bad that, you know, they used the young pitchers. We pitched every fourth day. You know, I didn't lose a turn. You know, if I'd have been sitting around here for 2 years, you forget it. See?
Yeah. You proposed raising the minimum salary and getting rid of bonuses. That idea was ahead of its time,
right.
Really.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
But nobody really dreamed that the minimum was going to be...
No, that's right. That's right. I mean, if you look at the whole thing, you know, if you look at management and some of these big corporations, even stockholders are raising hell now. You know, about some of these guys, 70 and 100 million dollar bonuses from corporate management. The whole thing has changed all across the board, you know.
Okay. All right.
Eight.